welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to Listen to Older Voices and part two of a three-part program on the life of John Steen. If you missed part one, we learned that John contracted polio at the age of 18 months, and in the early 50s, an understanding of polio and the treatment for polio was very poor indeed. John was kept in isolation in a hospital for 18 months, 18 months without contact with his parents. When he eventually went to school, things were not much better. Belittled by teachers and the system, he experienced some terrible times, like being told not to limp when marching at school. Told he would never amount to much, we learn this week that John was able to gain an apprenticeship. We also learn about his work on the Ord River Project, his purchase of a 34-foot cray boat, his joining the crew on an old schooner sailing from Melbourne to Sydney, and about his marriage with a ceremony at Melbourne's historic Rip and Lee. We pick up with John talking about his apprenticeship.
There was a friend of the family who he was a local builder, and he owned a boat building business. And he said to me, you're fit and strong, Johnny. He said, why don't you come on as an apprentice builder? Mum stepped in and said, oh, Johnny's not real good with his schoolwork, and he wouldn't be able to do that. Anyway, I ended up working in the boat shed.
Right.
And I did my 4 years apprenticeship.
You did your apprenticeship?
As a boat builder.
Wow, terrific.
And then I went on to do pattern making. And we also had a foundry, a non-ferrous foundry. And I went on to do all the castings for the fittings of the boats, like chain plates and rollers and turnbuckles. And
so your skills were broadening immensely and very quickly.
Oh, he taught me. I mean, the first year, I think, all I did was sharpen chisels, saws and plane blades and sweep the floor.
Yep.
And we had no electric machinery apart from a saw bench.
Goodness me.
Everything else was done
so
by hand.
So you really learnt the real craft side of it.
Yes. The caulking and the fitting of planks, the steaming of planks, the steaming of ribs, the whole works. I actually, years later, built a boat in McEwen's in Bourke Street.
Goodness me.
I built a dinghy in there for Black & Decker as a promotion, but no, he was the only bloke who actually gave me a break. And, well, I can never repay the skills because he not only taught me how to use my hands, but he also taught me how to use my head.
Mm. Which in the past nobody had given you any credit for.
No.
Let alone an opportunity.
No, I was just a polio victim and doomed to, as one headmaster said to my mum, well, he can always drive a truck.
In other words, there's nothing for you.
There was, and I mean, you know, a truck driver those days.
That's right, we're talking about those days, yes.
That's, you know, you're looking 1960s, probably one of the lower
class. It was almost totally unskilled work in those days.
That's right, yes.
You must have felt an incredible sense of achievement getting through that apprenticeship after everybody's comments to you and always being told that you're not going to amount to anything.
Yes. Well, it's very rare that I actually talk about my past, because the things that I've achieved in life so far, the stories that I could tell, you wouldn't believe them. Because
truth is stranger than fiction.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, that's right. But I mean, I could go home to my hometown and I could walk into the same hotel and find one of my schoolmates still sitting in the same corner, still having his 12 pots after work and going home and having his tea, and whereas I was an adventurer. And when I got out of my apprenticeship, I was off. And that's when I really started to learn about life.
Take us through that journey with you, John.
Right. Well, I, having the skills that I had, I headed for Perth. And I worked in the building industry in Perth for quite a while, and 1968. And then I ended up working on the Ord River Dam.
Oh, it was a big project.
Lake Argyle.
Mm.
And that was a big project. And believe it or not, I ended up driving a truck up there. The money was good, and they needed drivers. And even though in my younger years, the next door neighbour, he used to pay me $2 a day to drive this Bedford truck for him. We'd go up and we'd be carting hay or whatever. And so he'd put the truck in gear, and I used to drive the truck around the farm and pick up the hay, or sometimes we'd go up mallee routes and pick up mallee routes, and they'd go faster, slower, faster. And so I wasn't a stranger to trucks, and especially with Dad having the old army blitz.
Of course.
It actually had a gun tower on the top.
Oh, that would have been neat as a free kid.
So I used to stand on the passenger seat with my head out the top of the gun tower, and that's, I wasn't a stranger to trucks, but anyway, I did the season up in the Kimberley Mountains and worked on the Ord River Dam, and then the wet season set in and everything shuts down.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
So after the wet season, I was invited back to go back the following year. But like all young fellas, I met a girl and fell in love. And
what was her name?
Rosemary.
Rosemary.
And I never went back.
Right.
But what I did was I bought a 34-footer cray boat.
Oh,
in
right.
Port Fairy.
Wow, that's a big change of lifestyle.
Well.
You've been building boats, I understand that, but to buy your own boat was a big step.
I think I was the youngest bloke in Victoria to own a cray boat.
Yeah.
And I've got all my tickets and everything. And this friend, Ron Stewart from Port Fairy, his son runs a business now, Gary, we were schoolmates and playmates and that. I was looking for a boat, and I wanted to sail around the world. And of course, Dad thought I was stark raving mad.
Yes.
And anyway, this old boat, which was built by Peter Locke in Queenscliff, it would have probably been about 80 years old then. I bought it for $500.
Goodness.
500 bucks, and we're talking late 60s, and the average wage was about $60 a week then.
Yes, that was a lot of money, you're right.
You see, so, and I did eventually sell her, and I believe she's still sailing down around the Gippsland area as a cray boat.
What did you use her as a cray boat or just as a boat for?
No. I had plans to fit it out, and I was heading for America.
And what happened?
Oh, I fell in love.
Ah, yes. Many a young man's dreams have come to an abrupt halt with the right lady.
And I was different than everybody else, and when all my mates, they spent their money on their cars and fatties and making them as noisy as they possibly could and putting all the gadgets on them. I owned an old Mark 7 Jaguar.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, that
but it wasn't the style of car in those days, was it?
No, but yeah. I mean, it was good enough for me, no. Yeah. And there's a funny story with the Jaguar, but anyway, I worked on that boat for years and I put a lot of money into it, and eventually I had to make a choice, you know, what I was going to do with my life. And eventually we sold it to this fellow down at Gippsland. That was another end of the chapter in my life.
But the beginning of another one by the sound of it.
Oh, well, prior to selling the boat, we had a vessel pull into Portland called the One and All, and she had some propeller problems and had sent out a distress call, and they towed her in, and she was an old topsail schooner, around about 110 feet in length, and I was always keen on old ships and any sort of boat, really. And anyway, I got talking to the skipper, and he said, oh, he said, you've had a bit of sailing experience. And I said, yeah, well, I've not only done a bit of sailing, but I'm a boat builder and that. And he said, would you like to come along to Sydney? And I thought, oh, yeah, I wouldn't mind, because I'd never sailed on an old schooner. Mm-hmm. And he said, I really need a deckhand, and that, there was about another half a dozen of us there. And so he said, I'll pay you fare back from Sydney. So that was an adventure. That I immediately went to the boss and I said, look, I need to take a couple of weeks off and sail to Sydney. And we sailed for the bicentennial celebrations.
Oh, right.
And, I mean, we near sank a few times, 90 miles off Melbourne here, with bilge pump problems and things like that.
Right. But that's the excitement of the adventure, isn't it?
Well, it never frightened me, because I've always been able to swim. And,
right.
But, I mean, if you can imagine a 30-foot swell and you're under sail. And we pulled into Eden in New South Wales and stayed the night there, where they made us all welcome. And then we headed for Sydney.
Across the sea, I am.
listen to older voices, reliving the spirit of Australia.
From Eden to Sydney, we were painting and getting everything ready, and then we came into the harbour, and everybody, there was heaps of people, and I'd never met celebrities or whatever, and one of the gentlemen that joined us at Eden, Sir Gilbert Maplin, I never really had anything to do with royalty, and the skipper of the yacht said, we've got a fellow coming from Melbourne to join us on the last leg, and he's been knighted by the Queen. Gip was his name, Gip Maitland. But he turned up in his chauffeur-driven car and at Eden, and then everybody had headed for the pub, and or the Fisherman's Club it was, and he was a writer, and he'd been knighted by the Queen, in his words, for his contribution to the Australian way of life. And I did contact him there at one stage, and I said, Gip, look, I've got a heap of photos of the one and all, and we never ever got around to catching up. So it's a shame that he never ever got to see the photos and that. But after the celebrations and the celebrities and the photographs, and I mean, I was blown away by, I even made Time magazine.
Well, that's something most of us can't say.
No. But we ended up, we sailed out of Sydney and spent a week up on the Hawkesbury River.
Mm-hmm.
And because back in those days, I was just off by myself. My mum was going stark raving mad, and she rang the harbour master at Sydney, Sydney harbour master, and said, I'm looking for my son. And because I was up the Hawkesbury River.
Having a wonderful time.
And then when we got back, I dropped in to see the owner of the vessel, who was skipper John Huey. He had a restaurant in the Rocks in yes. Sydney. And I went up to see him because I was about to go home. He goes, oh, John, he said, you should have been on the phone to your mother. Your mother's been driving the Port Authority mad. And anyway, I got home, and that was quite an adventure. And I'll show you the photos. So, some real beauties. So
that was a lifetime experience. Once a lifetime experience.
Once. Yeah. So after that, I kept exploring, and I wanted some land somewhere. And then I got married.
To Rosemary?
No, to Beverly.
Now, how did you meet Beverly?
I met her. I was in a hotel. I think it's called the Melbourne Hotel. And I've never smoked in my life. Anyway, a friend said, come on, we'll go and see if we can pick up a couple of chicks, as we used to say those days. And anyway, I met this lady, and the place was full of cigarette smoke. And I said to my mate, I said, look, I'm going home. I'm really going home. I'm sick and tired of it. Anyway, I met Bev, and she was a nurse at Prince Henry's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time I was working on the Art Centre when they were building the Art Centre here in Melbourne.
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
It turned out that Bev lived, we both lived in South Yarra,
mm-hmm.
and we lived around the corner from one another.
Oh, goodness me.
So
convenient.
So, yeah. We started going to the botanical hotel there and have a few drinks, and one thing led to another, and then we got married at Rip and Lee Estate.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, well, her father paid for the lodge.
He must have had a bit of money because yes. Yeah, lovely place. Did you get on well with her father?
No. She wasn't meant to marry a humble carpenter.
How often fathers say that.
And she was a triple certificate nurse by then, and she was lined up to marry a doctor. But she ended up marrying John Steen, the carpenter.
Look, love doesn't look at those things, does it? It looks at the person, not what they do.
He was one of these men that you just could not sit down and have a heart to heart talk and he was a fellow who had. He had three of everything, three cars, three boats, three TVs. And he would have been one of the first people in Australia to buy a colour TV and all that sort of stuff. He was a shipping manager for CSR Coal Mines in Newcastle and used to really give me the irrits because you'd go up there for a holiday and I used to like a beer those days and they were wine drinkers and beer was the equivalent to being a truck driver.
Snobbery is an amazing thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and he was quite nasty to me at times. And I mean, if he hadn't have been my father-in-law, I might have snapped back at him. But luckily, Bev used to stick up for me and say, you start to be a bit civilised to John. But nothing ever changed.
No.
I mean, he had his attitude, and that was it. So, I might say to hire Rip and Lee Estate. The entire place. It was a pretty good party.
Oh, I bet it was a good party. Best of all, he paid.
So as the art centre came towards a close, we'd been married a year, and my first son, he was on his way. Anyway, we were going through the paper, and Bev said to me, she said, you know, there's some land on King Island. And I said, is there? And anyway, we flew over to King Island and had a look around, and we ended up buying 82 acres.
Goodness.
On King Island.
Well, that was quite adventurous.
Well, the story's not over. Is that I had already said, well, I had set me heart on the farm, so we bought the farm and Bev got herself a job immediately at the local hospital, and I got the job as the assistant harbour master for King Island, and my duties was to look after the maintenance of the wharf, and I had a couple of workers who used to do that, well, the painting and all that sort of stuff. But my main job was to supervise the bringing in of the Straitsman. Now, a lot of people would remember the Straitsman. I can't remember the time. I think it was about 1967. She tipped over in the Yarra River.
Join John and I next week as John talks about the unique lifestyle he and Bev experienced on King Island. John also relates a story about the time he nearly sank the Straitsman, the ship that was connecting King Island to the mainland. Now, needing in the operation and the likelihood of losing a leg, John shines through with that typical Aussie spirit. So, join me next week and catch John's story and the spirit on Listen to Older Voices. We'll be right back. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.